Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome to the show. This is the DL Link Show, where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination on 101.9 Chai FM. Nikki Seberini here. Great to be with you. You know, I've just returned from a visit to the hospital. Unfortunately, my father isn't well and he's in hospital, but that's not the point. The point that I'm making is this, that there are incredible people out there who have dedicated their lives to helping others. And usually it's at a time when we are most stressed because the people that we love are sick, or we're sick and we're scared and we don't know, or we're angry or we're frustrated or whatever it is. And these people who come into our lives to help, to assist, to heal, usually get us at our worst times, right? And they are driven by something far greater, I think, than just it being a job. And I just want to say that, you know, spending quite a bit of time at the hospital and watching doctors and watching nurses, I'm left in awe that every day they wake up and they want to heal. And they have good days and they have bad days, but they want to help people. And, you know, on this show, we talk to cancer warriors, we talk to survivors, we talk to doctors, we speak to people who motivate, and it's all about, you know, treatments and and what we love to do on this show is also to introduce you to the human being. And that for me has been quite enlightening, is being able to look at doctors and nurses and go beyond just thinking, you know, they're here to do a job and they must do the job, to seeing the human being and being so grateful to each and every one of them for doing what they do. And I just wanted to put it out there, especially on a show like this, because each and every one of you have had that experience, you know, whether you directly are going through treatment, where you know people who are going through treatment. And when you walk through those doors in a hospital, you're entering a space of hopefully healing. And we hope that that is always the experience. But yeah, just amazing, really. Just a shout out to doctors, nurses, healers, people who are out there and dedicate their lives to helping others. So our first guest is one of those, actually, because she's an oncology counselor. So she helps people who are on the cancer journey deal with the journey, help them through the emotional ups and downs, the times when you wake up and you feel hopeless and you don't know what's going on, or you're incredibly angry that this has happened to you, or you don't know what step to take. And she guides people and takes their hand and she guides them on that journey. And we actually had her on the show in January this year, but she has such a phenomenal story and she has so many insights that we have invited Nadia Boysen back onto the show, because Nadia herself is a cancer survivor. So not only has she been helping people, but now she gets to experience firsthand what that experience is like. So Nadia, welcome. Thank you so much. Welcome back onto the show and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you so much. It's a privilege.
You know, there was so much to talk about, and I'm so delighted that you are back with us. And I just would like to just start off by introducing you to the audience, because you've been working, and you consult at DMO practices, so Santon Oncology and the Western Oncology Centers, and you are an oncology counselor. How long have you been doing that for? And how long have you been doing that for?
I've been doing it for 13 years now. So I used to work in Pretoria at the Mary Potter Oncology Center, which is focused on chemotherapy. Now I'm working for DMO. They do the radiation part. So I've seen both sides, basically.
And, you know, then you were diagnosed. Perhaps you can just talk about that, Nadia. I mean, we spoke briefly about it, but you've walked the journey with so many cancer warriors, and then to have that diagnosis, I'm just so interested, in how you were able to cope with that diagnosis.
That was It was surprising in a sense. My dad also had cancer, and that prepared me in a sense. I think if you have a close family member who's had cancer, you kind of feel that, you know, there's a probability that somebody else might get cancer in your family. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have it, you always have it that in the back of your mind. But you obviously hope that you won't have that journey yourself. So when it happened, it might not have been such a big shock, I would say. The big shock came when the doctor told me that it's triple negative breast cancer, which is obviously from all the breast cancer choice, different breast cancers. It's obviously the worst one, because it's triple negative for all the hormones. So the treatment is more limited, can I say, and the prognosis is much poorer. So I think the biggest shock came from that and not necessarily the cancer diagnosis. But I have been working in oncology for 10 years by then. So I had a lot of support from oncology people who know, doctors and nurses and just everybody in the unit that was extremely supportive. And just having knowledge about it as well was much easier, I think, as opposed to people who have absolutely no idea what cancer is about. So sometimes it's good to know. Sometimes it might be better not to know. But I think in my case, and with my personality, it was definitely easier knowing more rather than less.
Yeah. And how, I mean, with this triple negative, if you say, which is the worst for you, how did you cope with it and how was the treatment?
Well, the treatment initially is the same. So you get the same chemotherapy, the surgery, the radiation. Most other breast cancers that test positive for hormones, they go on to hormonal treatment after the standard treatment, if I can put it like that. With triple negative, you can't get hormonal treatment because it's negative for all the hormones. So you just carry on and hope that there's no relapse. Luckily, they've advanced so much in terms of treatment that there's an immunotherapy available now that you can actually get. So there is that option, but it's not always funded by the medical aids, and it's very expensive.
Are you going the immunotherapy route?
I haven't relapsed, so hoping I don't. But if I do, I would that would be the only option.
Mm. Nadia, you write for Buddies for Life, and I'm really hoping to hone in on the, you know, are you tired of everything about being about your cancer? And we look at thoughts and we look at what do you spend your time doing and who do you allow in your life and rethinking your narrative. And what really jumped out at me was the power of the words that we use, the story that we tell ourselves. And I'm wondering, you know, how many people who are listening, who are going through, you know, this journey, if they are aware of what they're thinking, because we know that so many of those subconscious thoughts that come up, we're not even aware of. We kind of experience them as they run through our minds, but we're not really aware that they're popping up over and over again. And I'd like to cover that. But as an introduction to that, I want to just go back to your story, because in your story, you talk about the kind of inner dialogue that took place with you, the words that you entertained and the words that you didn't entertain. For example, you never said you didn't say I'm sick. You said I'm only diagnosed. Perhaps you can expand on that, because I really think this is extremely powerful.
My thinking around that was that I didn't feel that sick. Even with the chemotherapy, the symptom management is extremely good. So I didn't feel as sick as you would, as I anticipated, if I can put it that way. And I also thought that, you know, if I ever was going to relapse, or if it was going to turn out in a not favorable way, that I'll leave those days to be sick. So my main focus was to see it as a diagnosis, which needed treatment. But I'll be sick when I'm really sick. I'll lie down when I'm terminally ill or something like that. I wasn't going to stop life or be bound by it and see myself as a sick person until I need to be hospitalized or if it turns out poorly. I'll save those days in case it comes.
So there's almost a separation. The diagnosis is there's something happening, but you're not attaching to this idea that you are sick, which is really, I think, powerful, as I said, with the words that you use. So let's talk about this. You know, most people going through this cancer journey, reaching a point where they feel like everything is about cancer. Everything is revolving around cancer, thoughts and conversations and activities, and how difficult that can be. So perhaps you can just speak to this, you know, what are you thinking and what do you spend your time doing and who you allow in your life?
Yeah, I think what I very often see is that sometimes families just completely take over, you know, or just the way you grew up and the norms and the traditions and, you know, dictate how you should behave. And people often also try to measure their journey in relation to how other people are doing, you know. And I think it might be because they fear that they're not doing as well as others are. And I think people feel obligated to be nice and do the things that's expected of them during this journey. And that just increases their sense of being powerless. You know, I often hear people say that when they get to places and they see people in a social setting, you know, everybody asks them, how's the cancer? And they don't always feel like talking about it, you know, or they're not ready to talk about it. But they feel that it won't be polite if they decline to answer, you know. And that's hard because then you're just doing what you think is the right thing to do, but it's almost like an emotional violation because you're not ready to say how you're doing or what's going on. You know, it's not always friends that ask. Sometimes people are just curious, and it's not an ideal place to be in. So it's very confusing. And you can't really say what's right and what's not right. But I think people should sometimes just stop and think about things, you know, and take the power back, because they so often feel that they have to do things and, you know, it's the right thing to do. It's you have to do things, but it's about reframing how you see things, because very often you don't have to. You just feel like you have to, you know, and there's always a choice. And but we're so used to giving our power away, which is also not the ideal situation for a cancer patient, because you already feel so powerless in many ways. That I think regaining that power and reframing how you see and do things is vital for survival in this world.
Yeah. I mean, you started off saying, you know, we've all been brought up in different ways, and the different things that we do or don't do or that are acceptable or not. And there are a lot of people who, as you say, who are very caring and they want to know. And so you probably spend a lot of time having to get back to them or answer their questions or reply to WhatsApps or emails or put a smile on your face or do all of those things. And it feels like, I suppose, that it could be this outward experience of having to do, needing to do, must do all the time. And so you're saying, you know, kind of take this moment and think about whether you actually need to get back to them or respond in a particular way, but rather look after yourself. I suppose that's something that could take a lifetime to learn, Nadia, especially if that's how you've always been brought up, being polite, being friendly, wanting to make other people happy.
Yes, definitely. I don't think it's an easy process.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get people who can't even say the word cancer. You know, they would refer to the tumor or the illness. And if you get a patient like that and you put them in a social setting and you just want to confront them or have a conversation about their cancer, you know, it is an emotional violation because they're not ready to even say that they have cancer. You know, and I always try and explain to the patients that, you know, you don't have to be rude. It's not rude to say, you know, I'm not ready to have a conversation about this, you know, or can we please focus on something else? I just want to get away from everything today, you know. So I think it's just about learning the skills to say no when you're not ready, because people also have an emotional journey through this and they know when they're ready to talk and when they're not. And it's important, you know, that they do it on their time and that they go through this process that's in an authentic way for them and not just do things in settings where people confront them about topics which they're really not ready to discuss.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like what you said, you know, to be able to be honest enough to say, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to discuss it right now. The thoughts, you know, how do you stop those thoughts? As I said, a lot of these subconscious thoughts keep coming up and going through your mind over and over again. And so there are times when you are very consciously thinking it, and there are times when you wake up in the middle of the night and these thoughts pop up. So what are your suggestions for people who are listening who can relate to that, who just can't stop the noise and these fearful, awful thoughts?
I think that's where one of the approaches that we use is cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, is where you focus on the way that you think about things. And I think that's where reframing also comes in, you know, how you see things. A lot of people see chemotherapy as poison. You know, they have negative connotations to a lot of things. And if they can change their thinking, you know, it automatically also changes their behavior towards things. I think if you struggle with intrusive thoughts, you know, it's definitely something that's causing trauma. And then you need to get a way to deal with it. And I think that's where coping mechanisms come in. And I'm truly surprised at how many people don't have coping mechanisms, but use avoidance to get away from their emotions and think that that is a way of coping. So I think the importance would be is to make sure that you do have coping skills and you don't use avoidance, because then those intrusive thoughts will just keep on coming, unfortunately. It's like unresolved trauma.
So interesting. Maybe before we say goodbye, you can just identify the difference between a coping mechanism and avoiding. Because some people may think that avoiding something, avoiding the pain, avoiding the thought is a coping mechanism.
Yeah, that's important to understand the difference. So a coping mechanism is where you get emotions out. So that's by journaling, by exercising. But when you exercise, you have to be cognizant of your emotions, you know, when you do that. Another thing is if you play instruments, if you write music, if you journal, anything where you can get your emotions out and deal with them. Avoidance is when people watch movies or they sleep or they read a book. So they think that because their minds are busy, that it's coping, but it's not. It's actively avoiding. You know, when somebody keeps themselves so busy that they can't think, you know, it's definitely a sign of avoidance.
So you say they're healthy ways to cope with whatever it is that you're doing, and part of it is being able to process how you are feeling.
Yes, definitely. I think just the important thing is that, you know, a lot of people nowadays focus on becoming still, meditating, you know, being mindful, breathing techniques. And I feel that we should still allow ourselves to get rid of our emotions, our anger, our powerlessness, because they make us toxic from within. So I always try to motivate people to first get your emotions out so that the toxicity comes out. The cortisol doesn't build up and make you toxic from inside. And when that is out, to become still and then focus on things like meditation and breathing exercises. Because I think it's very important to first deal with the more difficult, the more aggressive type of emotions. And that needs to be to get out in some way or another.
So, Nadia, for someone who's listening who simply doesn't know how to do that, they don't even know how to feel. There's so much dissociation that's happened. There's such a separation between, you know, what they're thinking and what they're feeling. There's the terror of allowing the feeling to be felt because maybe they feel they'll never be able to switch the tap off of the emotion. What do you say to people? Because I think it's such an important point to look at the difference between avoiding and a coping mechanism. And as you say, mindfulness and breathing, amazing techniques, but you can't use it as an avoidance to, like, you know, not feel. So what do you have to say to encourage people, to help people, guide them, connect with those difficult emotions?
Yeah, that's, you know, when somebody's way of dealing with things is dissociation, you know, it's a pattern that we learn from a young age. Very often, you know, and that just happens spontaneously as we grow up. So I think the most important thing is to go and see somebody and get some guidance in relation to that, because it's not an easy process to switch that off. You do definitely need some psychotherapy in order to learn the skills to do that. Yeah, I think, you know, and just by starting to understand your feelings and why you are feeling that way, you know, is very important. But it's hard processes, and I've seen in the oncology world that people are often only dealing with the emotions after treatment. So it's kind of like a PTSD that they deal with, and it's almost like when you lose somebody, you know, when the funeral's over, when all the arrangements are over, you know, then you all of a sudden have this breakdown when you become still. And it's the same with cancer patients, you know, when the treatment's over and they don't feel like they're fighting for their lives anymore, you know, the mental health becomes a much bigger issue, and somehow it just, something triggers it, and then they start dealing with it.
Yeah, I mean, you started off talking a while ago about the way we're brought up, and all of these things that we avoid or we suppress or we've developed because of that, they kind of come to a head when you have this kind of diagnosis and you have to face a whole lot of things, which is why so often people talk about a support system. And how that helps people work through things. It also talks about people having a purpose and giving back. because that channels it. But I do think, and we have had many warriors who have shared their stories, who have spoken about the importance of having someone to speak to, you know, going for therapy, for counseling, so that they can work with the emotions and work with whatever comes up. And I can't stress that enough, which is, I mean, Nadia, that is what you do, right? I mean, you go into these, you know, these oncology centers and you help with the counseling. Before we say goodbye, is there anything that you want to share with our audience before we let you go?
I think just allow yourself to have an authentic journey and don't worry too much about the people around you and how their journey goes. And I think, you know, decisions that you make should be yours, not because the people around you think that it's the right decision for you. At the end of the day, you're the one going through treatment and you should be okay with it. I don't think you should be too much influenced by what other people think, feel, or want you to do.
Powerful message. As you were saying that, what came to mind is so often we are brought up to believe that we shouldn't be selfish. It shouldn't be self-centered. We should be thinking of other people. And kind of you're saying, you're not saying being self-centered, but you're saying put yourself first. It's important. Put yourself first.
Yeah, I think the focus is on self-care. And at the end of the day, if you don't practice self-care, you know, your chances for relapse is much bigger. And so in order for you to have the best chance of being there for your loved ones is to put yourself there first. If you don't, you know, the chances of relapse is always bigger. Yeah, it's not about being selfish. It's about having the best chance to be there for your kids to grow up.
Yeah. Well, Nadia, thank you so much. I mean, so many gems there. Of course, you write for Buddies for Life. And Buddies for Life is amazing with all these articles, people sharing stories, experts, people like you giving these insights. So we thank you for joining us once again on the DL Linked show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. Thank you. Nadia Boyson, who herself is a cancer survivor. She's an oncology counselor for Santon Oncology in the West Rand Oncology Centers. She does write for Buddies for Life. And by the way, sign up for Buddies for Life. Just the most amazing articles. So often we get guests who have shared their expertise or experiences on the show directly from Buddies for Life, which is fantastic. And I just can't stress enough, you know, it's a time to be a little bit self-centered. It's self-care. And some of us are simply not used to that, but we're required to. Yeah, I hope you got that message loud and clear.